Hold a seat at the bar to join us for another episode of McAnally's Pubcast, a podcast exploring the fun and fantastical mind of Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files series. Hosts Tanzin Jess and Maggie bring you another round of literary analysis on this immense, immersive, and colorful environment inhabited by Harry Dresden, the world's only licensed private investigator and professional wizard. Join an active and engaged community of new and diehard dedicated fans focused on the fabulous themes, theories, characters, context, lore, and more. This is McAnally's Dresden Files Pubcast by Free Flow Rambling. Conjure by it at your own risk.
Welcome to the McAnally's Podcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 17.7, Laissez le bon temps rouler, where we are covering the novel Proven Guilty. My name is Tanzin, and I'm joined by Maggie.
Hello, hello.
And Jess.
214 days.
And today, we are also joined by our guest, Shayla. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hey.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Jess brought this idea to me a couple years ago now.
I didn't know it would take that long to get to this book.
And you gave me the wrong book, too. So for 2 years, I had the wrong book on my shelf.
She studied so hard for the last one, guys. She knows everything about the last book.
I didn't even read the last book. I was waiting until you said it was good to go. So we're good there. Currently, I do my own horror book and movie reviews. I can be found on TikTok and Instagram under the username horrorfile62318. I'm also on Goodreads, so if you want to see the obnoxious amount of books I can put away within a month, I'm on there as well.
All of her stuff will be tagged on our Instagram and such.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Well, I'm happy to have you here.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for the commitment.
You're welcome.
What are you doing on Saturday the 15th, 2 years from now?
I'm starting an initiative.
Thank you to our Patreon subscribers for your generous support. It's people like you who help us do what we do. If you're not yet a Patreon subscriber, sign up today and get a fuck ton of bonus content, kick-ass merch, behind-the-scenes outtakes, and more. Sign up today at patreon.com/freeflowrambling. Chapter 9. Harry bails Nelson out of jail and gets the story of the supernatural assault at SplatterCon. They drop Nelson off at the airport and then leave for the Carpenters to face the music.
I think you meant SplatterCon, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
You were not. Was I supposed to say it like that?
have you listened to the audiobooks at all, Shayla?
No, I'm not really an audiobook person.
Okay.
I'm,
oh, that's thank fine. God, neither am I.
I mentioned it last episode. It's just I like it because James Marsh's that does it. Every time it comes up in the book, that's how he says it.
Oh,
like
that's
SplatterCon,
hilarious.
Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
So it's, yeah, just a little bit.
Sorry. Yeah, so it's kind of making a... It's kind of a gag now with the thing.
Harry is a liar. Liar pants on fire, once again. Not that you have to disclose your funds to your friends, but even now when he's like, oh, Murphy, they haven't upped the price since like 1700s and blah, blah, blah. But I have been putting all my money towards Little Chicago, and I also have a stash so I can bail random teenagers out of jail. It's like, who are you?
Yeah, that's like $2,000 he's got stuck away that he had to pay for this. We find that out later.
He woke up with financial literacy one day? That doesn't make sense.
What kind of rainy day funds are you building?
Right? For a man who has nothing and cannot afford anything.
Remember the days where he couldn't afford a steak?
Although, or the taxi home?
Or, yeah, and I was going to bring that up too. But he does, in all fairness, say that it has been increased a little bit since then. But obviously, maybe it's just all that money he's saving on, like, housekeeping. I don't know.
Although, he wasn't putting money towards it before anyway.
Although I feel like they did mention, was it in the first time or has it come up at another point? I think early on when he mentions the fairies first come in, he says they also, like, stock his pantry. Right?
Yes, and that is probably helping his food cost budget. You are right
there. Yeah, even though he ends up with,
oh,
like,
I forgot about
so
that too.
I don't know if you know about
lots
this, Shayla.
Frozen pizza.
So in an earlier book, in book four, he had to help out the fairies. And part of his reward, without asking, is he now has this, like, team of fairies that come in and clean his house whenever he's not there.
Okay.
And before that, I mean, he was a bachelor and he was busy running around saving the world. So his place wasn't like filthy, but it was kind of, you know, unorganized and a little bit messy. And so now he just, right, they replaced his cat's litter box with like a nice pine handmade wooden fairy bowls and all this kind of stuff. So, but he does mention too that they stock the pantry. So, but he ends up with like weird things like 15 boxes of Fruit Loops and like, you know,
and he's
a
also
thing
not
butter.
Really supposed to say anything about that.
He can't say anything to anybody.
Can't
yeah.
To anyone.
So
yeah.
It's kind of like, well, can't complain, though I might want to.
Yeah. So this is so the hence the point about his groceries, and that is that he might be spending less, but he just it's literally like a crapshoot on what he'll find in there at any given day.
Now the thing about Harry is that he's probably the only person in Chicago who has a real legitimate reason to be building an apocalyptic bunker.
Right.
And he's not. He's just like, no, I want my depleted uranium and 15 boxes of Fruit Loops and I'm good.
Which is the one place they're not allowed to go is in his lab. The fairies don't get to go down there, and which I like, considering he didn't know they were coming in the first place and that this was going to be a thing. But I don't know, maybe that just goes with the whole fairy magic. They're just like, we'll just read your mind and know that this is a no-go.
We know about wizards. Maybe they just couldn't lift the carpet.
they couldn't get to the trap door. Yeah, I'm sure that's the problem they had while getting into his wizardly warded house.
Toot's not that strong.
Yet.
I don't know, from what I read in the previous chapters of this book, of just on his door alone, like...
Yeah.
Need a bit of a sledgehammer just to get
probably just enter through the never-never.
You know, and speaking of that, I miss Toot. We haven't seen Toot in a while.
Yeah.
Now I feel sad.
So he pays for Nelson's bail.
Lucky lad. Yes, and we also learn that Nelson is thin and lean and... also a Splattercon fan, apparently. He's got the button.
The
and
t-shirt.
Harry describes
may or
him
may
like
not
a
does
model.
Martial arts.
I don't know if it's described as a model because, like, my vision for Nelson is just, like, this tall, lanky, like, long hair, like, kind of that burnout you'd see in every 80s horror movie.
I don't know.
Just
slicing
about.
Slicing your finger on cheekbones is pretty
Oh, he
modeling.
Just has James Marsters spike cheekbones. That's the only addition you can add to
James
that.
Marsters
and he's elegant.
Is a model worthy.
Maybe then I is. Just read Nelson completely wrong because I'm just envisioning like sharp cheekbones. I'm imagining gaunt and they're like protruding a little bit.
That's why I think it's something specific though, because he doesn't describe him as like some drugged out kid who looks all skin and bones. He describes him as just being like whipcord and
which
like,
I think
strong,
is kind of the thing.
Cheekbones.
Like given Molly's look and the fact that this guy has been arrested, I think that Dresden's expecting a bit more the gaunt, junky looking kind of whatever, and he's like. He sort of is, but not quite, because it's not just like druggy thin.
Gone.
It's not just like gone. He's like, no, he's actually like, he says like martial arts or something where there's actually like muscle and tone and stuff there.
And then he also says that despite all this, you know, he's only a 19-year-old kid and he's got some martial arts training under his belt and he's just, you know, a guy. And he still takes the time to think things through before he just automatically jumps Dresden. So, you know, Jim Butcher and or Dresden are trying to imply that like this isn't your average, you know, junked out.
He's
still a participating member of society without the, I don't know, just being in jail. And we get, you know, Molly says he didn't do it. Nelson says he didn't do it. But the implications versus who Nelson actually is.
Yeah. And that is, yeah, that's a big plus in Dresden's book because he's annoyed at Molly for the whole thing, which don't blame him. And yeah, and Nelson basically comes out and he's all like, okay, thanks, I gotta go now. And Justin's like, the fuck?
See, so, and that's probably why I thought of it like lanky, like rough around the edges, because that's such, even in horror movies, that's a trope, like kind of wrong, person was in wrong place, wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it all through horror movies all the time. It's just like this guy who's rough around the edges, he happened to be there for this incident. And it's like, so, oh no, you obviously did it.
Automatic.
Because you look like a piece of shit. You're going to jail.
Yeah. But yeah, but the fact that he does stop for half a second, even though Dresden's like trying to nudge him into that, go ahead, take
what?
A swing. Come
Dresden
at
Dresden would never do that.
Come at me, bro. And he's like, he actually thinks about it for a second, which, yeah, granted a lot of men twice his age wouldn't think about him before they. So you're right, it does. It gives you just the hint that there might be a little bit more to Nelson. There's a touch under the surface.
That's
there.
A, I think a good benefit of the doubt there, like maybe, but he also seems kind of douchey there too. Like could go either way at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he is still 19 and whatever. So yeah, he doesn't have all the maturity in the world, but
he doesn't even have a frontal lobe yet.
Harry just got his, so.
Right, Harry, still,
Harry's still learning how to
Harry's still breaking his in. It comes and goes. So he comes out. He's all happy. He goes to greet Molly. And Molly's okay, but like a tiny bit standoffish. There's some... She's just not quite as happy to see Nelson as Nelson is to see her.
I sort of read that as like she's like... Not in front of Uncle Dresden.
That's kind of what I was reading it as, too. It was just like, oh my God, not here.
That's interesting, because, yeah, I don't think I did quite read it, but I get it. I get it.
Yeah, it's hard to remember, because I know why. So it's hard to remember what I initially thought for that scene, but...
Yeah, I feel like
I think a little bit, too, of like, you just got arrested, bitch.
Yeah.
Did it or not.
I feel like I read it a little bit the way Dresden seems to, that Molly's not quite as into it for... But, yeah. Whatever.
I'm with you to disappoint my parents, not because I like you. My parents aren't in the room. Stay 10 feet away from me.
Right. So, yeah. So, he immediately gets on the phone to call the cab. And speaking of his finances, I mean, we're jumping ahead slightly here. But decides he's got to do whatever, blah, blah, blah. They drive out to the airport. They drive to the carpenter's house. He's like, keep the meter running. Goes in, has like probably a minimum half hour conversation or something. It's like, I'm like, this was the boy who exactly in book one pretty much had to like jog out to like... you know, Michigan to get to the lake house because he couldn't afford like a cab or anything. And now he's just like, yeah, just
15 taxis a day, whatever.
Keep the meter running. I'll go from like downtown or where, because he's like a couple blocks from his house to the station. And we figured Dresden's sort of inner city or something ish. I don't know. Sure. Right. But yeah, all the way out to the airport, all the way back to the carpenters, and just keep the meter running, bro. I'm like, okay, see, that to me, that's even worse than like the, you know, 2000 rainy day fund for like the bail money or something. It was like, when did you become Mr. Money? But now, once again, are we coming back to Bigfoot's gold nugget? He finally figured out how to cash that thing in, and now he's like taxis for days.
Just shave off a couple of gold scraps every day, you're good to go.
Right.
So part of the reason why Nelson is in a rush to go is because he wants to go and meet the director of some famous horror movie.
Darby Crane.
I have such a weird envisioning with Darby Crane when he's originally introduced. I saw it as a mix of like Alfred Hitchcock and Stanley Kubrick.
Oh my.
Like kind of like... bigger dude, but like the crazy look of Kubrick. But also you kind of like read it as you're probably a pretentious dick.
That I think comes in.
That's more Hitchcock. Kubrick was just a straight up asshole. Like he was known for just pretty much basically torturing his actors.
Oh, lovely.
Shelley Duvall.
Poor Shelley Duvall. Malcolm McDowell, too, for Clockwork Orange. Oh. The scene where you see him, like, strapped down with his eyes wedged open. Kubrick hated A Clockwork Orange. He hated it. He wrote it, threw it together because he had a deadline, and when it was actually picked up, he was pissed about it.
Oh.
So in that one scene, he actually put Malcolm McDowell in that scene, had his eyes pried open, left him there for an hour. Wasn't Jesus even recording. Christ. Just left Jesus him there. Christ. He was an asshole.
Wow.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, we all know Shelley Duvall. It's the more notable one, how he used to, like, get up in her face, like, screaming at her, trying to, like, initiate this fear in her. And he fucked her up so bad. She's like, no, I'm done acting now.
She quit, didn't she? Like, she didn't do anything after that, did she?
She did one more piece before her passing, and I actually have the movie. It was, like, some indie werewolf movie. I haven't watched it yet, but it's called The Forest Hills. Oh. But she came back for acting, but even, like, seeing her, like, being advertised for it, she looked rough.
Oh,
yeah, like, I think she, like, had a nervous breakdown or something, like, pretty much to that, almost to that
degree.
Yeah,
she quit acting and then just did her own thing for many, many years, and then, yeah, came back for this one piece and then passed away, what was it, like, last year or the year before, something like that?
Wow.
Can't remember off the top of my head.
Yikes. That's why crazy. I can't watch horror. that's not fake enough for me.
Yeah. Right. You have The Shining. Shelley Duvall's having a nervous breakdown and getting traumatized. Meanwhile, the kid doesn't even know he's in a fucking horror movie.
I read Crane and thought Ichabod Crane.
Yeah.
It's about the only Crane I got in my head.
So Nelson tries to leave, but Harry insists on getting let in on what happened to him and to get him in jail. So they struggle a little bit with, like, they get standoffish.
I just got you out of a cage. Yeah.
I will put you back in there.
Damn well, tell me where.
Then finally, like, Harry's able to bribe him with the promise of cab fare and food, although we don't think he ever follows through with the food.
He did not get them food.
That's so rude.
He just didn't mention it? Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's his, again, he's like, haha, just kidding, bitch.
Let me dangle this thought of a fry in front of your face.
I got what I want. Oh, you're in a big hurry. We don't have time to stop now. It's not my problem.
You should have got arrested earlier.
So Nelson goes to the bathroom. He's followed in by the guy who owns the movie theater next door. Doesn't know that at the time. Just hears this commotion. when he comes out of the bathroom, guy from the movie theater is dead. And there's a lot of blood everywhere.
Well, not dead.
Not dead. He was just... Oh, right, shit.
He's not dead yet.
We're getting there.
Not yet.
Tis but a flesh wound.
A lot of flesh wounds.
Yeah, no yeah. shit.
So I kind of liked... It was kind of funny the way that Butcher did this. And I appreciate how he gets the point across, but isn't overly graphic about the whole... So I had, like, a lot of coffee. I was in the stall.
No,
okay, just
it's already too graphic. There's no need for that entire sentence.
Get out of the stall right away.
You know, it took me a minute.
Skip over it.
But
I skipped over
it. I would have helped him, but...
It took me a second, yeah.
It is. It's funny.
Not necessary.
This is not too bad. Like you said, I don't always go in a lot for like toilet humor and that, but I was like, all right, this was kind of, yeah, you did sort of subtly make the point without having to be too graphic and disgusting about it or anything like that. Just, you know.
It's the kind of toilet humor I can definitely appreciate because it's not like graphic and disgusting.
Yes.
It's just like, okay, we've all been there. It's like, you need to get to something, but...
Exactly, especially like any parent or anything like
Absolutely,
that, right?
Yeah.
You know that you're like, okay, I'm coming, but dude, you gotta give me a sec.
Sounds like a personal problem.
Yeah, so, well, first of all, actually, even before that, and I don't know if I buy this or not, because he's like, hey, we're at the convention, and Harry's like, convention? And he's like, yeah, the horror convention. He's like, there's a convention for that? I'm like, Harry's such a pop culture nerd and stuff like that. Like, I get that. You know, he's had to back out of, like, TV and can only go to, like, drive-in movies because of his old magic thing, right? But I'm like, I feel like Harry would...
They did say this was the first year. So if he didn't hear any radio advertisements...
True, but I still feel like he would know they exist. This might be the first one they're having here in Chicago. Like, this might be SplatterCon. You know what I mean? Like, the first time I went to the Calgary Comic Expo, it wasn't the first time I ever knew that conventions existed. I was just like, oh, we have one here and stuff. It was more that. I just was like, I don't quite buy that Harry's like, they have a convention for that. I'm like, you would know that. You might not be able to go to them. You might not be up on all the most current stuff because it's not easily accessible to you, but...
I don't know. Like, that could also be a trick from the author, too, because... Like Calgary, for example, I think this is the 13th HorrorCon that they're doing next weekend. I really hope I'm right on that. But even horror conventions.
Otherwise, you get your badge revoked. Show up and you're banned. No, I'm sorry. You got the date wrong.
You got the amount wrong. Shayla,
yeah,
go fuck yourself.
This is not 13. Yeah.
But you just, even horror conventions, like I knew there was the comic conventions. I knew there was book conventions and stuff like that. But horror conventions, I didn't know existed until like. Easily like 7-8 years ago. Just you had never heard of them. And then like as I started doing like more horror reviews and following like different celebrities and other reviewers, it was like, holy shit. And like even then they started out so tiny, so that's why you weren't hearing about them. And now they're huge.
Yeah.
Like Calgary has the largest horror con every year. And this year it's even bigger because they're expanding.
Is that in Canada, North America?
Canada.
The world?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, there's huge ones down in the States that I'd love to go to, but
I know, it's like same as some of the comic confessions. Like, one of the years I'll get to, like, San Francisco Comic Con or something, but yeah.
You're right, it is 13. I just looked it up.
There you go, bravo. You're in a gold star.
Yay.
Or, I don't know, what do you get for horror convention?
Pumpkins.
One stab, one,
get a pumpkin.
One bloody machete, I don't know.
So, like, especially, I'm not sure when this book came out exactly, but if it was, like, quite a number of years ago when horror cons weren't so big...
Early 2000s.
I could.
Our fact checker will find out for us in a second here.
2006 or something? Which I will edit out if I'm wrong.
2006.
So yeah, like then like even comic conventions weren't what they are now.
Okay, partially I get that, but I do feel it was a little bit of Jim Butcher's own... lack of awareness on conventions, I think, honestly, because in chapter 11, he starts off again explaining when people think of conventions, they normally think about like a work retreat to go flirt with coworkers and like do other tomfoolery. And I'm like, no.
The professional kind.
That's definitely not the way it's aged. If you say convention now, everyone's thinking of Comic Expo, Horror Con.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, whatever. Work ones are like seminars. That's what you go for, like,
exactly.
Work with. There's, like a seminar or a retreat. But, yeah, conventions.
And, yeah, maybe
we're
in the early
biased,
2000s.
Biased culture.
We are a biased sample here.
On the one hand, I would say yes. On the other hand, you know, in 2025, everyone's a fucking nerd. Everybody wants to go and see the new Star Wars movie, the new Avengers movie, I'm not saying it was a little bit less... So in early 2000s, but in 2025, everyone is playing D&D now.
I feel
everybody
it
is
really
fucking...
blew up with the Big Bang Theory. It absolutely did, because, like, it was being shown that these guys who were funny and idolized were massive nerds. And then what do you see an explosion of after that? That is my conspiracy. I am sticking to it.
That is kind of fair.
We
kind of trended a little more towards the nerd side of it. So we might not have, you know, but yeah, I never
thought. I found it to be annoying because I've been a nerd my entire life. Maybe not fully horror nerd, but just in general. But after the Big Bang Theory, and I'm like watching all these people I went to high school with who used to pick on me and try to beat me up for loving Star Wars and would bully me relentlessly, and now they're all into it. It's like, you assholes.
You are just a wannabe nerd, okay? You are a total poser.
I just participated in a poll where everyone was supposed to rate themselves on a scale of 0 to 100%. How much of that is nerd and how much of that is jock? And I specifically name myself 0% nerd, 100% jock. So if you three want to be in your own club, go ahead.
I'm sorry, what?
No way in hell I'm on your team with this.
How many shifts have where we'd only talk about like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter?
That wasn't me.
Or I'm Doctor Who or Harry Dresden.
No, not Doctor Who. I never got into that.
Okay, fine, but Jess does. Jess plays D&D. She DMs D&D.
Just for fun.
She tries to recruit people. She watches other people play D&D.
Just a hobby.
Yeah, that's what...
Something to do.
Wow.
I'm not really...
I'm sorry. Did you start off today's session going, Dresden is a big fat liar?
He is.
Relatable much?
I do like these series. My point is that I do think that it is maybe a little bit of Jim Butcher in the early 2000s being like, I don't think conventions are as popular as they should be. Let's, you know, talk about him in my book, and the rest of the world being like, bro, they're pretty fucking popular.
And maybe that is. Like I say, I feel like, you know, I did have some awareness, at least of like comic conventions kind of a thing throughout my high school years. And yes, maybe they have definitely blown up a lot more then, but it just kind of was like, really? But maybe I stand corrected. Maybe it's normal that. So I don't know. But anyways,
you guys took me to my first con, so
yeah. And guess who she dressed up as? Dresden.
I did. Nobody knew who I was, and they took away my Ozark club.
That's right. Actually, oh my god, that was hilarious. Which
I hadn't read that far in the books yet to find out what that meant.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's
but
next.
We did actually check the...
I was going to say, I feel like that comes up in the next... I think that's in White Knight where it comes up. But yeah, Harry going into a building and the guy's like, you can't take your staff in with you.
You have to check it.
You have to check it at the desk. So he's like, do I get a receipt for that? And the guy's like, sure. And he puts down like one... Because he's like, it's not a big stick. It's like an Ozark walking staff or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so the security guard like, yeah, writes Ozark went... Received one Ozark walking staff or whatever. So it was so funny. So yeah, prop check. Because she did. We had just a big
walking stick,
just a tree branch thing that I used to use. And I'd take the dogs walking and stuff like that. And they're like, yeah, no, it's not like foamy or whatever. So it could theoretically, you know, injure someone.
Yeah.
So yeah, so she had to check in a prop check. So we put one Ozark walking stick on.
Walking the, club.
Walking club, whatever it was. Yeah, I forget the direct quote now, but we thought it was very clever. It's funny. I do remember there was one or two people that recognized you because you did have at least like the pentacle necklace and stuff that you had. And there wasn't a lot, but I'm pretty sure there was like at least one or two people that picked up on it. Unfortunately, Tansen's also not 7 feet tall, so
I'm not.
They didn't have that clue in.
I have breasts and shit too, so.
Whatever, you can gender bend. The last time I did a cosplay, I did Negan from The Walking Dead.
Nice. That'd be fun.
It was, actually. Put a lot of hard work into that costume.
Nice. Unfortunately, I didn't watch it, so...
I had Lucille and everything.
Nice.
I had to make it, but you can buy,
did
like...
Did let you walk in with
it? Yeah, because it was just a plastic bat.
And I saw
the barbed wire. I actually found like fabric barbed wire.
Oh, cool.
It's like definitely Amazon wasn't as big as it is now, but it was still big enough that it was like you could still find quite a bit on Amazon.
Nice.
Yeah, I seem to remember walking around that year and like seeing other people with implements that should have been also checked and was like, grumble, grumble.
Yeah. Oh. How did they get away with
it? They get
that?
A lot of the weapons get thoroughly checked because I had to go through and you get like a tag to be like, okay, this is safe to be walking around with. So when I went through prop check, like they like went through everything, like feeling the barbed wire to making sure that it was a plastic bat and not something wooden.
Yeah. Some of them are remarkably
realistic.
Realistic, yeah. Like, yeah, and yet actually are made of, like, yeah, fluff and cotton, but...
So Nelson explains that there was no way anyone else could have made it into the bathroom. There's no way that anyone could have made it out. You hear when the door opens because it screams and there's a bunch of people outside making a bunch of noise that you would hear if the door was open. And there's no other exits. Yeah. Unless somebody could squeeze through the air vent that quickly and easily.
Maybe that's what happened. But yeah, so very suspicious, very not good for Nelson.
No.
The only other person in there, the only other person seen going in there, old guy walks in after him, gets the crap beaten out of everybody.
And the first
comes
person on the scene is a cop? Eesh.
See, that's why I say it goes so much towards like horror movies. Because like even in A Nightmare on Elm Street, the original one, the first victim, Tina, she gets, like, ripped apart in her sleep. And the only person in the room with her is her boyfriend.
Johnny Depp.
No, Johnny Depp was Heather Langenkamp.
Damn it.
No, her boyfriend. God, I cannot remember the actor's name. But, like, he freaks out because he just, like, watched his girlfriend get, like, slashed to death. Going across the ceiling and everything. And then he's like covered in her blood. He freaks out and he's just like, I'm fucking out of here. I'm going to get blamed for it. So he does. He bolts. And of course, like a day or two later, he's picked up still with no shirt on, just wearing his jeans, not even any shoes, still covered in her blood. And they just take him in because it doesn't look good for him.
Yeah.
So it is a trope. You do see like the whole like wrong place, wrong time. But how the hell do you explain that? And then Rod ends up dying, but that's neither here nor there. But.
As they do it all good. Oh, Nelson, it is not looking good for you, buddy.
Yeah, no, sorry, Nelson.
He unfortunately was not the last girl.
But yeah, and rightly so, right? Anybody under normal circumstances would be like, what other explanation is there? Like, with a lack of any other evidence.
Nelson did the right thing, allowing himself to be arrested. It's way less suspicious.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you've been found wandering around shirtless a couple days later, they'd...
Covered in someone else's blood.
Yeah.
So, okay, if it's a couple days later, why did this guy not find... And he didn't go to, like, a gas station bathroom and wash up?
He was too... Well, no, he's, like, too scared to go anywhere public. He's too scared... Okay. To go home because so obviously just, like, the cops are waiting at his house.
Supernatural trauma.
Behind his house. Yeah.
I mean, geez, go diving in the river. Fuck.
Yeah, right. That's all I'm thinking. I'm like, if you've got enough sense to like be, I'm going to blame, I'm getting out of here. And then you leave yourself completely covered in all the evidence and do nothing to, I'm like,
I don't know. The 80s were a lawless place. Okay. Nobody really had common sense in the 80s.
This is very true. And trauma, you're right, is not always.
Yeah, factor in the trauma part, I guess.
Just go with it. It's just that whole suspension. It doesn't have to make sense, okay? Just shit's happening.
His brain was jello after that.
Well, I mean, like, how would you feel too? Like, you're just sleeping. All of a sudden, your girlfriend's screaming and on the ceiling and then just, like, gets slashed right open and pours blood all over you.
Let's be fair. John Winchester didn't handle it really any better.
No, he really didn't. Nobody does.
No, no. Bad times all around.
So Nelson notices the time and then tells them he has to go to the airport to escort the movie producer, director Darby Crane, to the hotel. And as the cab pulls up, Harry notices the person who was following him earlier is still there, and Mouse is also quite discontent about it.
So I have another question about this. So, I don't know. So when I first started volunteering with our comic expo here, and it had been going for a couple of years, I didn't get in quite at the beginning, but it was still fairly new. It was still all completely like fan run at that point. And I remember when you could sign up for positions and things like that, right? One of the things was driving guests from the airport and that. So I totally get the whole picking up your guests and yeah, that was a thing that somebody, and who was it? I forget now who it was. Somebody's like friend's brother, like they're like, we need people. And they ended up driving like one of like the big name stars or something like that. It was crazy. But he's going in a cab. Like, this is what I don't get. So I was like, I totally understand that Nelson could be assigned to go and pick the... But I'm like, he's showing up in a
vehicle.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? There should be stuff. Even if Nelson doesn't have a car, I feel like he should have, like, had a loan or something. Like, it just seems so funny to me that he is dressed in, like,
he's
all cabby.
You're
just going to show up and be like, let me call you a cab. And
maybe he had access to a vehicle at the con but can't get there because of the time, being in jail. Who knows? There's lots of others.
He's going to rent a car from the airport, okay, and then drive Darby Crane around because he just knows the city better.
Oh, maybe it just, yeah, it was one of those things. I'm like, not critical,
I know, but it just sounded a little,
I was like we're going
to
be
there to say hi at the airport's not really necessary. He's a grown-ass man.
Well, I was going to say, right, if you're going to go pick someone up at the airport, you're going to go pick someone up at the airport. Like, it just seems exactly like, why go all the way there? Just be like, let me call you a cab. Like, you couldn't have gotten into one of the 50,000 sitting outside O'Hare.
Imagine how thick this book would be if we addressed every single what if. But, like, your arm would hurt from, like, trying to keep it open.
I get, okay.
Great workout.
You know, it could have been, again, you could have added on a couple of more minutes, and he could have just been like, get me back to the hotel, I got to get my car.
Secretly
and
Justin could have. Yeah.
I have just enough time to go and get my car.
Yeah, exactly, right? I'm just saying.
Yeah. Does this advance the story?
It would, because right now it's stopping us.
Right now, I'm going, why the fuck are you going to pay? Especially since this is, like, their big guest of honor. This is, like, their big name draw here. I'm like, I don't know. You're going to go pick up, like, Stan Lee and, like, your...
And why has nobody else made arrangements? Like, oh, yeah, our driver is in jail right now. Maybe we should get somebody else to pick him up.
No, he'll figure it out.
This is really small fan run con, okay?
I would assume, though, there's also, like, background, like, Molly texting others at the con being all like, hey, we're still good for this, just give us a minute. And, like, would have, like, let other people know that, okay, he's out, we're going
now.
Hey,
this is 2006. We've seen no evidence that Molly has a cell phone.
Oh, I guess.
Just saying.
Fair.
But otherwise, on principle, she's at the payphone at the coffee shop. Yeah. Being like, I need to talk to Sandra.
I'm going to bring it up next chapter. Why the fuck doesn't Michael have a cell phone? Like,
because Michael doesn't need one.
He's fucking crazy. It's weird.
He has the divine text.
He's too wholesome for that shit.
Right?
Yeah. No, you have children and a wife. They need to contact you. Sorry, honey, if only they'd invented something faster than mail.
Michael is always where he's supposed to be, so his wife has no problem ever getting a hold of him when she needs him. And when he's out on business, there's no getting a hold of him anyways, because, you know, if he needs to be there, God will let him know.
That's ridiculous to me. We'll get to it next chapter.
But it makes such great holes in stories that he has, you know.
I get why fucking Harry can't have it. It's everyone else. It's like, we also don't use phones in solidarity with Harry. If the wizard doesn't get a cell phone, nobody gets a cell
phone.
Support
your technologically incapable friends.
It's like how everybody uses Messenger to contact me because I refuse to use anything else. I appreciate that, rest of the world.
Yeah, all right.
Maybe secretly he had a cell phone at one point, but, you know, divine intervention, it kept calling churches.
For repenting? Why?
I don't know.
Prank calls. Why not?
Prank calls.
Okay, they drive off to O'Hare and abandon Nelson at the airport to go deal with his Darby Crane. But Molly.
I'm just going to go with him and see you later. Thanks, Harry. Appreciate the bailout and the manipulation and the stuff, but gotta
go. Ms. Carpenter.
What?
Nay, I say.
The fuck you will. Yeah, Harry putting his foot down. I did everything you asked me to do, and my part of the deal was whether or not I chose that you have to go see your parents, and I choose you have to go see your parents.
He's in trouble. I need to stay with him.
This is also very funny, real quick, when she's all like, but Harry, and she looks at the taxi driver, and she's like, you know, stuff. And then Harry's like, yeah, supernatural.
Yeah, I know. Nice too. She's like, you know, and yeah, he just flat out, he's like, I don't know, might be supernatural, maybe not.
Yeah. So funny. I'm in the yellow pages, people. I don't care about keeping this secret. I don't know how clear I have to be. I walk
You're
around
the only one
like
that
a
has
freak.
A problem with yeah. this. I don't have a problem with this.
Yeah.
You're making it a problem. Yeah.
And even Michael, I feel like, isn't lying either. Like, yeah, he does cover up his sword. He doesn't, like, walk around in public with chainmail and a sword out. But at the same time, I feel like it would go against Michael's, you know, duty to lie exactly about if somebody point blank asked him. So I feel like Michael himself also isn't necessarily keeping the secret. He might not be as, you know, fucking flamboyant as Harry is, but...
Yeah, his, again, putting him in the path of evil is not always as front and center in the everyday as Harry's is. Again, it seems like a lot of Michael's work still happens behind sort of
but
closed
like,
doors.
So
but
do
exactly.
the carpenters sit their children down and be like, listen, you cannot tell anybody what daddy
yeah,
does for
no,
work.
Exactly.
Or I feel like more the carpenter children would be like, la 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 la, vampires and vampires and fallen angels and more vampires and I can't think of a third bad guy, but more vampires.
Werewolves,
warlocks,
exactly.
Fairies.
I feel like Molly should be way less about it too, and I get maybe
ogres,
around her
trolls.
Her fellow teenage friends, she might be like, I want them to think I'm weird. But at the same time, I'd also just be like, I feel like the carpenter children should especially just be like, la 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 la, bad guys, monsters, and like the school
This is another Tuesday
like,
for me, okay?
Exactly. Like the school should be calling home all the time, be like, we're concerned about your children. They
it's
draw
Tuesday.
A lot of
Don
weird pictures.
Must be in trouble.
I would assume the carpenter children would at least be homeschooled.
And yet, you are wrong.
They go to Catholic school.
Shocked.
I think that this is entrapment. I think Harry never had any intention of not taking her to her parents, and I think that's not fair.
The guilt trip that he, like, puts her through to convince her to go is just brutal, too.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, like, and that's what makes me think that he always intended to bring her home.
She's Catholic.
No matter what.
She already has enough guilt.
Right? I don't know. I think there was probably a pretty good chance, which might be why he made it. He probably knew. I think there is... I'll give Harry the benefit of the doubt that...
But him not even knowing that she's been gone from the house for a year makes it more, I don't know, just like weird. Because it'd be one thing...
But has it been a whole year?
Roughly, yeah.
No. She got into trouble like a year ago, and then Charity put the... And then it's just more recently that she's... But yes, it's been a rough year, but...
Point is that if Harry had known that from the start, then I could see him more plotting to be like, okay, I need to get her home somehow. But it just seems a little bit more just, I don't know, unfair that the whole time he always planned that he was going to, like, take her home no matter what. Because that's how I get it from this sort of conversation that was like, well, you should have thought of that before you made the deal. And it's like, no, bitch, you were going to do that no matter what the deal ended up, how it turned out, that it was always going to be your judgment. Because I feel like Molly makes a very good case. I didn't actually need to be bailed out. I haven't actually done anything that needs to, you know, be informed by my parents, outside of the fact that some little slight danger is happening around me. But, you know, you're convinced this has nothing to do with me, so go away.
Yeah, I mean, I get, and you're, you know, I guess entitled to your opinion. But, no, I mean, the thing to remember is that Molly is only 17. She is still underage. So that does bear a big factor, right? And Harry's like, do I want to take responsibility for... You know, again, the stuff that's going on, right? If Molly's parents are aware she's got tattoos and piercings and ripped up clothing, no harm, no foul. They're already aware. He can be like, all right, fine. If not, then, you know, like, should she be, like, again, she's calling me from the jail to come bail somebody else out. So obviously she didn't want to call her folks. So obviously right there, she doesn't want them to find out what's going on, kind of a thing. She did, you know, kind of lie, cheat, and steal to get Harry down there. And then she's just trying to be like, okay, well, whatever. But, like, you know, like, I think Harry's got some fair points for being like, I don't feel like if this comes to light somewhere, and it will, because, of course, Michael and Charity find out everything because God's just going to make sure no matter what. You know what I mean?
And
he's like,
his
again.
His allegiance really is to Michael and not.
It is more. Yeah. Yeah.
His children.
Which, you know? I do understand. That makes sense. And that's how it should be.
Yeah. He and again, coming from like a parental point and stuff like that, I'm like, yeah, I can see kind of being like, you might want to help your kids, friends and stuff like that. But you walk a really fine line between interfering or not, or, you know, somebody else's kids and all that.
You've mostly convinced me, but if I was Molly, I'd be so fucking mad right now.
And undoubtedly, now, yeah, not to say that if I was Molly and 17 at that age, at that time, absolutely, I would have been doing every, yeah, same, I would have been doing it. No, you don't need to call, you don't really, no, that's okay, you don't, but.
And kind of, I can see it from both viewpoints too, like, again, Harry's allegiance is to Michael, but it's like that responsibility, and this is going to come to light. They're going to find out my ass is just as much in it as it is you, because if they find out I was involved and didn't tell them,
exactly,
like, again, it's my ass on the line. But then again, also, I was once a 17-year-old stubborn ass kid where it's just like, how dare you?
Yeah, oh, and absolutely, as the from the point of a 17-year-old girl, I'm 100%, I absolutely see where Molly's coming from and would have been with her 100% all the way.
It's occurred to me as we say this sentence, for the folks at home right now picturing Molly as she is described in this book, you are currently picturing Shayla as she sits across from us right now.
Minus the hair color. I'm actually going back to my natural color for once.
But I did notice there is, like, some colors in, like, your braids right there. Well, that's
yeah.
It.
Oh, I thought you were going for the tattoos. Yeah, it's
I worn both, out. Both but the many, many tattoos. How many tattoos do you have?
35.
Yeah.
Wow.
I count the piercings? Knuckles individually. Oh, God. Why are you making me do more math? Hold on. 9 currently?
I was going to say, we can see about that many on her face right now, so I don't know if there's... And then...
And how many did you get on your neck when you were 17?
I definitely did not have tattoos when I was 17. I got my belly button pierced and a couple ear piercings when I was 16, 17. But the tattoos and the other piercings in my face, that didn't happen until I was about 18, 19. Pretty much as soon as I could get tattooed, I was getting tattooed.
I had a couple friends. I can't remember if they were 18 yet or not. I feel like they hadn't yet turned, but I had a couple of friends get tattooed in high school.
I think I was the closest contender like then because I had the piercings and, well, just the tattoos, but not obvious.
Yeah.
We don't have to recover that.
Right. Like, my tattoos, my first few, they were always on my back. It wasn't until I was in my early 20s where I started doing my arms, and then it kind of just exploded where it's, like, everywhere.
My kids broke me. I just had one set of pierced ears until after I had kids, and then I started getting tattooed and pierced another place. I mean, multiple ear piercings, yeah. And... Mm-hmm. So, like with everything else, I just blame it all on
Jess. There's a whole lot of degenerates in this house.
No.
That's what makes the podcast so interesting.
Hell yeah.
Right? So, yeah. I think I get whether it was... I will give him the slight benefit of the doubt. There's a chance he might not have. But given that this is generally just teenage bullshit, he's like, no, not good enough.
Even if we just look at it from a purely literal, like a literary standpoint, why Butcher would have Harry be so brutal on that is to like have sort of a contrast, I think, for what's going to be asked of him and how he's got to change that.
Yeah, this authoritarian figure being established early on.
Yeah. That Harry's an adult now, and Harry has to do adult things. He can't just be a kid anymore. You know, he's got all the alphas looking up to him, and now his friends' kids are growing up and fuck. But it is kind of great where she's like, well, I'm not going. And he's like, do you have any doubt? And I'm just like, I'm surprised that there wasn't like, then the cab driver gave me a look. And like, you know what I mean? Cab driver's just like, okay, I will let this 7-foot-tall guy intimidate this teenage girl.
Well, and I know when I read it, I was like, oh man, damn. I don't think I recall him pulling out like the big guns like that.
No.
In such a way. It was like, oh shit.
He is harsh, but the cabbie picked him up from jail, so he's like, yeah, this girl probably deserves it. She looks like she just got bailed out.
Profiling people. Cabbies don't like it. They should be profiling other people. But yeah, I mean, it is true. And he does say, he's like, I'm not your mom or your dad, Molly. And these days, I'm not even a very nice guy. So he kind of writes, he's like, I got shit going on. You put me like, you know, it does. But yeah, it is just a little bit of exactly the wisecracking. Like we, obviously, this is book 8. We've seen him take out the trash on more than one occasion, but we don't usually see him go this hard line and not to his friends. What?
Bro, it's so unfair to be a carpenter kid. See, like, my parents have two friends, a fucking psychotic wizard or a priest. Who the fuck do I call when I'm in trouble?
Either way, my parents are fucking finding out.
And the only other, you know, like, out-of-town friends are also, like, pretty much...
Or my dad's coworkers.
Yeah. That are, like, the next best thing to, like, sense.
Right now, there's only one, and he lives in fucking Russia. So, yeah, everything's going great.
So Molly complies, and Harry instructs the cabbie to drive to the carpenters. And as they drive, Harry's palm begins to itch. And he worries about Michael seeing the sigil.
So this is the crazy thing, is that Harry does this whole, like, harsh speech, and Molly Carpenter, we're going to the fuck to your house, and blah, blah, this, and blah, blah, that. And then finally she's like, okay, I'm meek, and she's, like, all upset and stuff. And then they get in the car, and now Harry's in a cold sweat. And he's like,
oh, shit.
Oh, my God, I don't want to see the Carpenters. Oh, my God, I don't want to see the Carpenters. Oh, my God,
I have literally...
What did I do?
2 years. 2 years I have not come around.
And so for that
fucking
reason...
Molly.
I respect Harry a lot for that he still thought it was important enough to go to the place, like, the one place in the city that he is most terrified to go. And he's still like, fuck you, Molly. That's why I can see anger for Harry being like, you are making me do something I don't even fucking want to do.
Yeah, that's the other part of it, right? Where he's on there, it's like,
being an adult. Oh, Harry makes being 30 seem awful. R.I.P. to the rest of you, but this shit does not look fun.
Can you feel it inching ever closer?
Just wait. It's the knees that go first.
Bro,
not wrong.
I was making fun of this, like, kid at work who just started, and it was, like I was, like, crafting my insult in my head, and I was like, how am I gonna say this for, like, the most effectiveness hilarity? And I was, like, putting away the order, and I kneeled down and bashed my knee so hardly, and I was like, the karma got me before I even got a chance to, like, deserve it!
Maybe it's karma for how many times you have made fun of me for my bad knees.
just like catching up.
Minority Report is just going karma now. It's like, oh, I know you're about
that. That shit definitely comes back to you later. It really does. You'd be like, oh, fuck, I said that shit
no,
too.
No, not me. I'm in perfect health right now.
Yeah, how's that toothache coming?
So the chapter ends. Harry contemplates if he manages to survive Michael and Charity's wrath, then he'll have to deal with supernatural assault, a mysterious stranger following him, and a try-hard vehicular assassin. All the fun stuff.
Well, it's awesome, too, because not only is he, like, sweating bullets over because he's like, Michael's going to know, Michael's going to know. There's no way Michael's not going to know, Michael's not going to go. On top of that, I'm coming home with Molly looking like this, and Charity is going to. I'm like, even Michael kicking my ass now pales in comparison to me bringing Molly home and having to face...
to her mother's daughter.
Yeah. He's like, that's... Yeah, he just... cannot win for losing
in here. Stop at Walmart first and you put on different clothes.
Yeah. Can we like bottle dye your hair like brunette in the car? Is there
I'll just buy you a wig. Yeah. He's like, I don't even care. I'm going to buy you a really big tube. You can just shove it all up under.
Only so you learn magic for that,
beanie.
Harry.
This is the United States.
He's going to buy her a Jesus, Harry, beanie. You're this all-powerful wizard, and you can't even, like, alter her a little bit.
It's a little glamour. Come on, Harry.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Shay, for joining us this episode.
Yay!
You guys are going to hear her several more times as we tackle this book.
And we do mean tackle.
This concludes our episode 17.7. Laissez le bon temps rouler. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and macanalys.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the magic alive and to see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling. Conjure by it at your own risk.